I'll look back as the market is closed. Good Tuesday afternoon, everyone. Kip Herridge here with the Daily Bear Investing Podcast. Hope you had a great day today. Let's see. It's a textbook looking mini, not even correction, right? What do you call this? A little shakeout, another buy the dip opportunity, but it does look textbook. Covered that a little bit. Boy, we're very close to big tech earnings. Next week, Tyler tracks all this stuff very closely. He just told me, check this out. Next Tuesday, Tesla. Wednesday, Meta. Thursday, Google. Amazon, Intel, Microsoft. So we're just a week away from today, from Tesla kicking off kind of some big tech, big innovation revolution names. And if you've been, if you're with us here at the VRA, you've been listening, you know that we're pretty stoked about what's happening in the world of tech and then what's happening in the world of really just GDP growth, corporate earnings. And look, we've had a war risk in the market, right? There's no mystery here. You have to be living under a rock not to know it. Now the concern is Israel are they going to react? Are they going to do something? Is this going to become a wider regional crisis? All the folks out there saying, okay, World War III has started. I'm sorry. I can't listen to you. And the reason why is you said it 100 times over the last decade and your credibility is, if I'm be honest, your credibility is shot. So yeah, let's lay off the here comes World War III nonsense, because we can't make money doing that unless it actually is. And by the way, there's a strategy for that as well. When the bullets fly, stocks are a buy. But again, that's a timing mechanism. But unless you think the worst case scenario is going to happen, rates are moving up a little bit. Okay. Again, we've covered this often. I'll just mention it again because it's one of my favorite topics, because I lived through it, worked through it, had a lot of fun doing it. 1995 to 2000, what was that? Yep, that was the dot-com melt-up, and it was a five-year party, essentially. And what people remember that, of course, they remember the dot-bomb, as they call it. But what most people seem to have forgotten, and I see no one talking about this, I think it's relevant, is it during, you've heard us talk about it a lot, I'll cover it quickly, 95 to 2000, the average yield on the 10-year was better than 6%, higher than 6%, with spikes over 7%. Again, we're 4.65% now. So, yep, why are rates going higher? Yeah, inflation is a little sticky, but remember, if you pull out of this last CPI report, because Jay Powell was out talking today, if you pull out two items out of the core CPI from this past month, if you pull out shelter, which I know is a biggie, okay, shelter costs are coming down. If you pull shelter out and insurance costs have been skyrocketing, but that also is a lagging indicator. So is shelter. These look to now be on the backside going lower. But if you pull those two out, core CPI is below 2% and it's been below 2% now for, I believe it's 3-4 months. So, yeah, inflation is sticky. Rates are higher than we'd like. We may have a regional conflict to be concerned about. So it's not that there aren't risks, but again, now you start thinking about bull markets, climb a wall of worry. I personally don't see these as, well, what I would signify as elevated risk. To me, they're just not. And let's all hope that I'm right about that, right? If that's the case, then this is a textbook set, folks, textbook setup going into tech earnings next week. Because unless you feel differently than we do, and again, we've covered this ad nauseum since we wrote the book, The Big Bribe, and we talked about the strength of this economy, the fact that consumers and American companies are in their best financial shape in decades. That's not an overstatement. It is actually hard fact. That is reality. And we've got all the data to back it up. People used to fight us on this. Now they don't even try because they know we're just come back to you with here are the 15 metrics we can show you that prove that we're right. And the fact that we now are in an innovation boom, a disruption boom, AI boom. We call it the innovation revolution. And again, these are not short-term cycles. These are long-term events that take place over multiple years. Again, similar to 95 to 2000. So if you're from the same school of thought that we are, this is a textbook drawdown. It's a textbook opportunity going into next week's big tech earnings, which again, we should absolutely crush. Analysts have been raising estimates. That's true. Yes, there is a potential for some misses because of those raises, but folks, they haven't caught up enough. They're not there yet. Jay Powell today was out talking about this. It's some I don't I watched just a bit of it. I saw some of the quotes talking at some conference about, yeah, you know what, we're having difficulty getting inflation down to our 2% level, and yeah, inflation's higher than we wanted. Yeah, it may put off our rate cuts some. The markets just haven't cared, have they? Yeah, again, initially, we were looking, remember, we were supposed to have rate cuts by July of last year. That was when the first rate cut, and then it didn't happen, did it? Well, SP 500's up 30% since then. So the markets clearly are fine without rate cuts. And I think that goes back and proves our point. Again, when rates were much higher than they are now, the market had its biggest bull market in U.S. history, when the average 10-year was better than 6% over a 5-year period. So I don't think rates are the problem. The economy clearly has not cared. Just today, we learned the Atlanta Fed just raised their GDP now estimate from 2.4% to 2.8% for the first quarter GDP. Ed Jardine, I wrote this up this morning, and I want to spend a minute on this because it's so interesting, because nobody's talking about this. I love talking about things that almost no one else is talking about. I'm going to read you part of what Jardini put out today. His title was No Landing. If you don't know, Ed Jardini, long-term famed economist, been around probably about as long as I have, although I think he looks old. I think he looks older than I do. But again, I'm sure that's the ego of me speaking. Now, he's a great guy. I think he actually is. I think he has been doing this longer than even I have. But Jardini, very good economist. I would say that with Ed Hyman, who of course we love at Evercore, and Ed Jardini, there's a couple of more. But these are the guys we kind of rely on to give it to us straight. And Jardini has been right. He's been excited about the economy, about the strength of the economy. He's been there with us. About 4 months after we said we're in the roaring 2020s, Jardini said it. So we've been tracking with Jardini for a while. He said, this is neither a hard or a soft landing. This is a no landing. The U.S. economy is still flying high. And here's the important part. He said, that's because consumers didn't get the recession memo. They keep spending because real disposable income is rising. More Americans are retiring and they have the means to do so comfortably. And this is the part I want to talk about. And 6 million or more, quote unquote, newcomers are consuming here rather than south of the border. So I cover this a bit. I actually haven't written it up yet. This is a poisonous topic. It'll be extremely unpopular when I write this up. If you already know where I'm going with this, you're probably cringing now that I'm going to talk about the upside to illegal immigration. But there it is. Ed Jardini just said it. At least 6 million illegal aliens have entered this country since Biden was president, most of these in the last 2.5 years. And it's a lot of people. That's probably on the low side. If that's the number Jardini is using, it's probably more like 8. It may be not. Who knows what the number is, right? And yeah, we're all sick to our stomach because of it. I mean, God, you can't. Trump is right. Can't have a country, you don't have a border, okay? And we all know the downside from it. But almost no one's talking about the upside, because there is an upside to it, and it's GDP, it's strength of the economy, it's consumer spending, it's gross domestic product growth, because they are spending most of their money here. I'm sure they send a lot because, of course, they're all getting stipends. I was just in Vegas last week, and one of my drivers was Hispanic, proud Mexican, been in the country legally over 30 years, raised his family, hardworking guy, guaranteed me that Trump was going to win. So he's all right winged up, if you will. And he just went off on illegal immigrants. And it's like, he told me things I hadn't heard before. Now, he said that his wife works in this area. And he spoke very confidently, like he knew about this, that they're all getting $1,000 a month. They're getting free health care. They're getting food stamps, and they're getting help with their rent. And I think that's probably all true. Okay, I don't have all those facts. But yeah, that has a cost to it, right? What is that cost? This, again, this is a topic that very few want to breach. What is the cost to us? It's debt, right? It's added debt. We are giving these illegal aliens money that taxpayers are paying for. But it's coming, it's, bottom line, it's coming from debt. Well, debt's an illusion. Now, it may not be for you and I. It's not for you and I. We don't pay our debt, people come after us, right? But who's going to come after the government if they don't pay their debt? Nobody. Because we will never not pay our debts. So when I hear people talk about the US is going to default on our debt, you know, listen, when I was a younger man, that message probably would have stuck with me. That message is complete nonsense now. The US will never default on our debt. It just won't do it. We're always going to be able to print money. Now, again, we could have the Bank of Germany set up. Okay, obviously the worst of things can happen, and that may happen. I don't think so, but it may happen. You know, maybe I see it on the horizon. Maybe in the next 15, 20 years, maybe 30, probably more like 40, 50. It's a long-term run up to insolvency and to hyperinflation is really what we're talking about, right? So that's not a problem of today. It's just not. It's like the people that keep saying the dollar is going to crash. Well, I wished it would right now. The dollar is way too strong right now. It is causing some havoc internationally, okay? Emerging markets. It's putting pressure on the Japanese yen and their currency relationship with the US dollar. So, yeah, I would love to see the dollar weaken. It just hasn't been. Now, it is lower than it was a year and a half ago. So it's still in a downtrend longer term, but it's been garlic strong in a more recent term. So point being, the debt that's increasing to allow these illegals to be paid this money, government debt's an illusion. That's the key point here. Government debt is, at least in modern days, in our time now, debt is an illusion because they just keep printing more of it. Yes, that does add to our inflation. That is inflation. There is no other inflation than currency debasement, currency printing. There is no other inflation. That is inflation. Printing more money, making our current money worth less. But you see the flip side of this. If debt is an illusion, and in the meantime, these illegals are getting, you know, I mean, what I sh we should run the numbers is what are they getting total? How many hundreds of billions of dollars is going into the US economy over a 5-year period? So again, there is a flip side to this, and there are a lot of reasons you can point to say the US economy is strong, and there are these outliers you can say that are allowing, as Ed Giardini says here, that are having the Atlanta Fed raise their GDP estimates from 2.4 to 2.8%. Consumer spending, again, is very strong. Yesterday, we got the retail sales numbers, very strong. You just can't be a credible person, in my opinion, and continue to say the US economy is in trouble. That has been the Republicans' message because it's just not true. US economy is really strong. I think it's much stronger than the official data is telling us. And I said that on Charles Payne's show last week. And I think that, again, I think that's what the market's telling us. So at the end of the day, here's the key point. Quarterly earnings, corporate earnings will continue to improve, will continue to grow. The US consumer, who's already in excellent shape, besides inflation, what is it out there you think is going to make it worse? Look at the unemployment is still very strong. Yeah, the economy is weakening around the edges. But again, we have a perfect setup here, really do. We have a textbook setup here for a bull market that will continue to move higher. And that's been our message consistently from the October 13th, 2022 bear market lows. We called the bottom that day. We forecast in our book, The Big Bribe, The Roaring 2020s. And we've been saying, as you know, this is a generational bull market driven by consumers and companies in their strongest financial shape in decades. And again, instead of getting caught up in the near-term myopic kind of a look, the key here is rising corporate earnings and GDP growth. Strength of the consumer will continue to power the markets higher. Pullbacks are a gift. That's the key point we're trying to make here. Tyler made it yesterday. Pullbacks are a gift. Now, how far is it going to go? Is it over? Talking about this current pause. Again, we're now looking at what the SPF 100 is down right at, as it, with today's losses, SPF 100 is down 3.9% from its peak. And so, look, we have every year we have, in bull markets, we have drawdowns. See, we have corrections of 8, 10, 12%. That's pretty standard. Is this one of those? We don't know, but I don't think so. And I think we have the data that tells us not. We think we're going to get a big move higher into Q1 earnings, and sell in May and go away, I don't think is going to be a thing this year. It really has not been a very accurate event now for I think the last couple of decades. It has not worked. It's been more appropriate to say sell in July and go away. So I think this market's got room to run. I think quite a bit of room to run, and I think we're going to be rewarded for number one for holding our positions we have. Continuing to buy the dip and maybe, for example, in parabolic options, what we're looking at right now, I just sent this out a few minutes ago. We're looking now at three great setups that we're about to take action on. And I think if you're an investor trader, this might help you a little bit. Three positions we're looking at. First is GDX calls, the gold miner ETF. I'll talk about commodities a bit later. Love this group, as you know. Okay. Gotta just say it. The Johnny come latelys now that are just that have popped on the gold bandwagon. I welcome you. Welcome aboard. But just as a reminder, in 2003, in my second ever VRE letter, this is BT before Tyler, right? What was Tyler doing in 2003? He was in college. So in 2003, no, he was not. Tyler was 11 or 12 then. But before Tyler, when I had the VRE by myself, in my second ever investment newsletter, I recommended gold, silver, and they didn't have GDX, didn't exist yet, the miner ETF. So I had to recommend Newmont Mining was the one that we used then. Gold was $375 an ounce. Silver was $5 an ounce, give or take a few pennies an ounce. I don't remember exactly where Newmont was, but that was the first time that I'd recommended, and we haven't taken our buy recommendation off. So the key for us is that we've always looked at gold, as you heard me say before, if you've joined us before, always looked at gold. That's my savings vehicle. I don't keep a lot of money in cash anywhere. Why would you? It's a depreciating liability. Fiat money only loses value. You've probably seen this just since we went on the gold standard in 1971, right? 1971, I think that's right. We went on the gold standard in 1971. US dollars lost 70% of its value. Can you imagine that? 70% of its value. But people are keeping savings in that. All right. So, no, I don't do that. I keep our savings in gold and other, and now Bitcoin, of course, as well. So, again, we've been huge long-term gold bugs. It's fantastic seeing this breakout. This is a true breakout. As to why it's happening, I see a lot of reasons out there. Everybody's got their own favorite reason. I don't know that anyone really knows for sure, but I think I like to keep it simple. Number one, look at a chart. This pattern, this perfect bull pattern, it's been a 10-year cup and handle formation, perfectly formed. This is a massive breakout. And, in technical analysis, the longer the sideways move, the higher the vertical move. And so you can actually, chart this out and basically use a measuring stick. And you can say, okay, this is the length of the horizontal move. Take half of that. That's going to be the vertical move. I mean, it's fairly kind of simple. And that's why you see some of the estimates, people now saying, okay, yeah, gold's going to $3,500 an ounce. That's kind of a measured move based on this breakout. I think that's on the low side. We've just met our minimum target, by the way. Minimum target for 2024 was $2,400 an ounce. We're over that now. I think this year, I think we'll see 3,000 plus. But this is going to be that bull market for precious metals and miners. And that's fantastic. You know, it's just, I think a lot of people that have been long-term believers in gold have been pretty beaten up for it. Everybody, gold's done nothing. What are you crazy? What are you talking about? Gold has kept up with inflation and then some, using a savings vehicle. And now we're making capital gains. And now we're making profits, pure profits on our gold. This has really been what's driven so many of us gold bugs crazy. Is that why Bitcoin has been going parabolic? We're stuck with what we think is the ultimate, a safe asset in gold, and it's just really it's gone higher, but you know, it's obviously nothing like Bitcoin has done. So it's just good to see. I think maybe the another key to this is that J.P. Morgan, who is rumored to be, of course, they're also a criminal enterprise. J.P. Morgan, rumored to be the largest owner of gold in the country. And a lot of people believe they're the largest short seller as well. They kind of got both sides covered, but all it takes is for the manipulation to end. For those that own it and control this manipulation process of gold, again, GATA, a Gold Antitrust Action Committee. I've known these guys for close to 3 decades now. They've proven in court that gold has been manipulated lower. And of course, no one pays a price, civil penalties, no one pays a price for it. The media doesn't cover it. But they proved that this is happening and that gold's been manipulated lower. And now, you know, maybe some of that's just gone. But I think it's a great setup. We do think gold and silver are going a lot higher. The miners are dirt cheap. They're just dirt cheap. Matter of fact, that's going to be one of our new buy recommendations for parabolic options. GDX calls, we're looking at QQQ calls. That's the NASDAQ 100 ETF. Again, on the charts, these are pulled back from. You know, just 2 weeks ago, we were at heavily overbought to extreme overbought levels on our broad market indexes. Now we're heavily oversold to extreme oversold. So again, it's giving you, from a technical point of view, a great looking setup here. And from a fundamental point of view, again, with corporate earnings growing and GDP and consumer and the economy in good shape, fundamentally, this pullback's giving us great opportunity. What we don't know is how far will the drawdown happen. Right? Will there be another external shock? Will something happen in the Middle East? Will rates pop through five, the 10-year pop through 5% and freak everybody out? So that's what you don't know from these drawdowns that as of now, again, we'll call a 4% drawdown so far. You just don't know how far. So you hate to get out over your skis and go in 100% and make your call and then not have a lot of cash left. Because if the markets go further, then you feel like you jumped the gun, right? That's the tricky part of this. But I think easing into it makes sense. You know, maybe buying half your position into before. Again, we want to be long before these tech earnings. Okay, that's our call. I think maybe take half of the cash you got set aside, put that into the positions you want to own. Again, we're looking at the miners, at tech, and Bitcoin, right? Talk about that more in a moment. So that's kind of what I think we're looking to do. And frankly, just talking about it on this podcast just helps. It really does. So that's kind of the approach we're going to use. So if we do get a little bit more of a shock, again, something goes wrong, we put the rest of the money to work at a little bit lower price. But I think, again, so far this has been textbook. We're welcoming this ability to buy our favorite investments at cheaper prices. That's the Warren Buffett school of buying your winter coats in the summer. All right, so here is markets. I should probably tell you this. You've already seen it by now. I'll cover it quickly. Dow Jones today was our only index that finished higher on the day. Again, markets were kind of all over the place today. No big move either way. Dow Jones finished down, excuse me, up 64 points. Again, great looking chart on the Dow Jones. It's trading at extreme oversold levels on stochastics and the other momentum oscillators we track, and the VR investing system also hitting oversold to heavily oversold levels. Dow Jones is the most oversold of the big indexes, so it makes sense they'd be up today. Everything else was down. Russell 2000 down 0.4%. S&P 500 down 0.2%. NASDAQ down 0.1%. Again, we track the semis, as you know, very closely. The SMH, the semi ETF today was up. Let me get a final quote here. Up 0.9%. Semis, by the way, down 9% from the, oh, just right at 9% from their highs. Semis have actually fallen And that's typically what we don't want to see. But again, it looks textbook, does it not? The fact they led the way lower, they led the little pause lower. As long as this doesn't turn into something more serious, then the semis should be the first to move higher along with tech. That's the way we're going to be playing it here. In our Eternals, let's take a look at the I got a lot of screens open on my systems here. There we go. We had advanced decline. So I'll just round up or down a little bit on both. 2-1 negative advanced decline, both for NYSE and NASDAQ. Volume today was 74% down volume day in NYSE. NASDAQ was 50-50, so essentially unchanged on volume. And new 52-week highs to lows, this is not pretty. We had only 38 stocks hit a new 52-week high to 483 stocks hitting a new 52-week low. So feels like we might get a little more weakness. And then again, great setup into next week. That's how we're playing. You know, again, a lot of people very worried about what's going to happen in the Middle East. A lot of people concerned about what the 10-year and what rates are doing. And our commodity, well, sector watch, apologies. Sector watch here. I've got a new computer. I'm trying to make sense of this. It is different. We had only of our 11 S&P 500 sectors, we had 8 finished lower, 3 finished higher. Led the downside by real estate, down 1.5%. Utilities, down 1.4%. Both lower, of course, because they don't like higher rates. Again, the 10-year up today to a 4.65% yield. Still below the 5% of last October, right? But again, we're creeping up to that. That's. I'll also tell you, though, the 10-year yield is now hitting extreme overbought levels on the VR investing system. This is typically when you see some reversal lower. So we'll see if that plays out. We're not extreme overbought on steroids quite yet. We're getting close to it, very close to it. To the upside today, we had very little here. Tech was up again. Semis were up. Tech was up 0.2%. All right, let's go into commodities now. Again, I just talked about gold and how we're positioned and what we think here. Bull market or bull markets. Gold today up $17 an ounce. Right now $2,400 an ounce. Silver. Down 1.8% on the day, but it's still had a very good run at 28.19 an ounce. Copper also had a very good run, down close to 2% today at 4.30 a pound. And crude oil, again, a lot of metrics showing you that crude oil is topping out here, both from technical analysis and what they call backwardation, kind of sending signals that maybe we've reached it. That'd be good news for inflation, right? So, but again, $85 a barrel, which is where we are now. These oil and gas companies are still making a lot of money. That's kind of a sweet spot, frankly. I have no problem 80 to 85, even 90 above that. The market start to get a little nervous. But again, 85.28 right now, essentially flat on the day. And finally, Bitcoin. Got a little to talk about here. Last quote here on Bitcoin is 63,253. As I speak, look, it's been Saturday when the bombing started, when Iran started bombing Israel, Bitcoin fell to a low of 61,000. If you look at the chart, you'll see there's significant support at that level. Again, right now, 63,248. Of course, the anticipation, the excitement is about this week's halving. And it's coming. It's, what are we, 3 days away? It's either the 19th or 20th, depending on exactly when we get there. But we're really 3 or 4 days away. Very exciting. That's going to change the landscape to a certain degree. But I don't think it's the only reason the halving is such a big story. And of course, it reduces the mining in half of the daily mining from 900 coins to 450 coins. It makes it twice as expensive, essentially. So, yeah, that is important as a structural reason, that the scarcity factor that works so well with Bitcoin. But the bigger reason is how, again, Bitcoin has performed 1 year to 18 months after the halving. You know, ridiculous returns. 7,900, we only had three halvings. The four returns have been 7,900%, 2,900%, and 700%. So we'll see how this the end result is. But the real story here is all the buying that's coming in, and it has yet to come in. Again, we know that the U.S. SEC approved these spot ETFs Okay, that's fantastic. And that's, of course, brought in a lot of buying. And of course, the move higher has been a near parabolic at points. But look at who hasn't yet purchased. For example, Hong Kong, where 10% of all wealth in the world is concentrated in Hong Kong. Of course, a lot of Chinese money, a lot of Asian money, a lot of U.S. money. Tax breaks there, tax advantages. Pretty cool for being in Hong Kong. No taxes there. Well, Hong Kong just approved the ability for investors, investment firms, etc., to buy, recommend, and purchase Bitcoin, these ETFs. That's been approved. I saw the launch date today for actually the ability to do it is April the 30th. So we're 2 weeks away from Hong Kong being able to buy Bitcoin. Right behind that is South Korea. Those wheels are in motion. Right behind that is Europe. Again, most Europeans cannot buy these Bitcoins, spot ETFs for Bitcoin. That's coming. Middle East, same thing. 80%. Approximately 80% of all U.S. investment firms, investment advisors, hedge funds, family offices, again, the biggies like Vanguard, 80% of U.S. investment firm-related groups, right? Individuals and groups cannot yet buy these ETFs. So the demand side is going to get crazy. So here's the way. And if you've listened to us for long, you know, this is a very common theme. We recommended Bitcoin at 2,000, sold it at 58,000. Okay. From that 2,000, 58,000, our theme was very similar to what it is now. Ignore the prices. Every chance you get to dollar cost average, buying higher or lower, just do it. You know, every month you have some extra money come in, or maybe you sell an asset, decide to reallocate your funds. Put more money into Bitcoin and you'll be very glad you did because it's going to be a one-way ticket to higher prices. I don't know exactly when. I think again, I'm on record as saying within 30 days of the halving, I think Bitcoin will be over 100,000. And if that does happen, my 2024 target goes from 100,000 to 250,000 possible to the upside. But whether or not I'm right or wrong doesn't matter. Just forget about timing. Just own it. I feel the same way about Tesla. Forget about the price. Hey, welcome a lower price because you can buy more of it at a cheaper price and just keep buying. Because again, there has never been a supply-demand story on the planet Earth better than what Bitcoin is. It's that exciting and scarcity value, the structure of this, the financial engineering marvel of our times. I don't think it can be overstated. It is that remarkable. And again, we've been fans for a long time, as you probably know. So that's our approach. We're continuing to recommend it, and we are looking to buy some Bitcoin-related calls. We use one of the Bitcoin strategy ETFs for that. All right, folks, I think that's everything. Covered a lot of territory today. Again, you know what we're thinking here. Again, we're in the roaring 2020s. This is the innovation revolution. This is the closest thing to dot-com that we've had. I think this will be bigger because the companies behind this and the innovation taking place from space exploration to autonomous driving, robotaxis, robotics, genetic research is taking, again, so many exciting things are happening. And I always leave, of course, AI. And what's coming out of that? I mean, this is a very exciting time to be alive and to be an investor. And that's why these dips will continue to be buying opportunities. Let's stay locked in, folks. This is that time. This is that bull market. This is that economy. All right, folks, have a great evening. Hope you had a great day. We'll see you back here again tomorrow after the close.